cannot lie. This is gore. Call that music.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Core. This is Core, the Heroes of the Storm podcast, starring me, Scott Johnson, with Bo Schwartz and John Jagger. Hello, Bo and John. Hi, guys. How's it going?
Hi. Hello.
We're going to do things a little different today. It's good to see you both, of course, but we have a special extra chair on the show today. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a guy we've been looking forward to talking to all week. It's Jade Martin, game designer at Blizzard Entertainment on the Heroes of the Storm team and chief lead on today's brand new hero release, Garrosh Hellscream. Jade, welcome to the program.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
That's great to have you here. So we've been stoked about this all week. I don't know about the rest of the player base, but I haven't been this excited about a warrior in a very long time. And so a chance to talk a little bit about him is going to be exciting. But before we get to all of that, you probably hear this all the time, but This idea that you are a hero designer on the Heroes of the Storm team, what does that entail? Now, you don't have to give me details, but what does it mean for somebody to come up to you at work and say, yo, you're in charge of Garrosh, go for it?
Yeah, so that's exactly what it is. You're in charge of a hero, and you really go for it. But to go into a little bit more detail, though, we have Kent Eric and a bunch of other leads who get together and kind of decide what the hero cadence is going to be and who those next heroes are. And then we have the jobs of, depending on where our schedule lines up, of getting a hero, say, like Garrosh. And we take that hero from a paper concept. So we'll do a breakdown of the schedule for you guys real quick. So we'll go about 2 weeks of paper design. So we'll sit there and we'll collect a whole bunch of ideas, and we'll collect ideas from the team and just kind of go forth and look at the fantasy for the heroes and their lore and just kind of go through everything. And then after the 2 weeks, we'll send out that pitch to the team, to the design team, to the hero designers, the live designers, and we'll collect some feedback. And based on that feedback, we'll iterate on that paper design and move forward with implementation. And so we'll do an implementation round, and once the initial implementation for that hero's base kit gets in, you know, is Q, W, E, and generally we start with one heroic and then add the second one later. So we'll go ahead and hit that that base kit implementation, and then we'll do a simple AI play test. And so all this while we're collecting feedback, and I'm doing a lot of the implementation for the heroes as well. And after the initial AI play test, we kind of just take it for a test run, right? See what abilities feel right. For Garrosh, for example, when he was first implemented, he could throw everything. He was throwing bosses, he was throwing dragon knights, right? Like, these were things we're like, okay, well, that's a little bit too strong, right? So we kind of refine the process before we take it to our design playtest, so we can get a really good unbiased feel of the hero without too much salt being thrown around after a design playtest. And then we'll just iterate every day on those design playtests. So what I'll do is in the morning we'll come in, we'll do a design playtest. We try and get four games in, and we'll collect feedback from everyone who is in that playtest. And then we'll hit for the remainder of the day, we'll iterate on that feedback, and then we'll do the same thing the next day. And generally that process lasts about 4 weeks. After that 4 weeks is up, we move from the design playtest to the team-wide playtest. So this is everyone on the team, the programmers, the effects guys, the sound guys, the tech designers, just everyone gets involved. And so the feedback starts to come in, and it's hot and heavy, right? Because everyone wants to get their hands on this new hero to play. Mm-hmm. And then from there, this is a very long process. Sorry if it sounds like I'm rambling.
No, this is great. I was hoping we'd get this kind of window into the process. So you're doing exactly what we had hoped would leak out. So continue.
Okay, awesome. And I should say every hero is different. Some heroes have more challenges than others. And it's not always as gravy as I may be making it out to be. But that said, after the team play test, that's when we start to get down to the polishing, right? Fixing any of the bugs, like the QA will have their bug passes, and they'll come to me, and Garrosh was no exception, right? Like, they'll be like, hey, there are all these weird interactions with Wrecking Ball. We need to get this fixed. And so we try and get those fixed before PTR and those types of things and before he goes live. We have sound and we have art that goes in. So the art team and the sound team are all, or they're both amazing. They'll get all their assets into the game and they'll ask me to hook those up to the temp effects that I created, right, for the playtest and whatnot. And then from there, I Cinematics gets their hands on it. And generally by that point, as a hero designer, and the chief lead, my hands are off of it. So once we get through the art, the bug fixing, and sound passes, that's when my job for that particular hero tends to end.
Now, so this really leads me to a question that I didn't know I had until this moment. Is this play-tested character of Garage Hellscream or any other hero you've worked on, is it just like this amorphous block of 3 or 4 polygons and you've attached some like very temporary abilities that are maybe mishmashes of other characters for now, but they've got numbers and stats assigned to them? Like, that is fascinating to me. Is that kind of the process before the art and sound and everybody else gets to it?
So we try our best to make these temp characters as polished as possible in our playtest so that it doesn't skew the feedback. So the feedback isn't, oh, the art on this looks wonky, I'm not sure how this ability feels. So we try and polish that as much as we can. So when we do transition to the final art, it's pretty smooth. That said, we don't actually have like block textures or anything like that. Our art team's generally super awesome at bringing characters. For example, I did Dahaka. We were able to pull Dahaka's model from the StarCraft mod into Heroes of the Storm and use StarCraft's model. So we try and get these early ones, early models in. They're not final by any means because they're just ported from another game, but it's serviceable, and that's the big thing for us.
I assume it's important to have as best a representation of that character as early as possible, so those biases don't kick in about, well, it doesn't like look like him yet, so I'm having a hard time reconciling his kit with the way he looks. And in other words, if you just used Rexar as an orc model to get yourselves by, that may not cut it. That's pretty interesting.
Exactly. Yeah. And we definitely never reuse. Well, I shouldn't say never. We try not to reuse existing hero models because in our playtest, it becomes very confusing. So it's either we have to avoid a certain hero if we do that. But we try and avoid that. I'm trying to think of different examples. I know when we were doing Zul way back in the day, we actually used the Dragon Knight spell minion as his placeholder model. So we don't always get something that's an exact representation, but we try and find something close.
So you mentioned Dahaka. Clearly, you've worked on other heroes. Bo, you're probably happy to hear about that. It's one of your favorite warriors in the game.
I love Dahaka. Yep.
Thank you. The question I would have is, your work on Dahaka, I think by all accounts, people are very impressed with the role that character has ended up filling out in the game. How does a previous, let's say a previous warrior, even though his role is a little different than a main tank, but a previous warrior type character, how much does that inform what you do on the next one? In other words, is Grosh an amalgamation of various other warrior types you've worked on, or do you have to come fresh and spanking new every time you look at a new hero?
So I think you always learn something from an existing hero. There's always something to be learned. And in the Dahaka example, he's fits more of that kind of bruiser role. He can get behind the enemy lines with his Brushstalker, but he doesn't have a lot of peel to kind of make him a main tank stay. He does have his dragon. He can reduce the cooldown with that with his basic attack talent. But by and large, he doesn't have a lot of ways to keep people off of your squishy back lines. He's much more aggressive in that regard. And so because of that, going into Garrosh, I knew I was going to be making a solo warrior. And so the goal was to kind of learn from Dahaka. And I actually did Zarya as well, and who is also labeled as a warrior, but she's not quite that solo warrior capable like Garrosh is. So I looked at what kind of a solo warrior needs in his, or we as a team look at what a solo warrior needs in his kit to make them viable. And that is all learned from previous iterations and kits that we've done.
Interesting. So he's a pretty controversial character on the whole, to say the least. In terms of his lore, Warcraft players have a lot of feelings about Garrosh and his time on Azeroth and sort of the impact and effect he had on the overall game there. And because he means a lot of things to a lot of people, that's pretty much, an easy thing to say. People may love him, people may hate him. did you approach this character with any of that in mind? Did, in other words, how important or how not important is it that that Garrosh is one of the most, let's just say it out loud, one of the most hated characters if you're talking just about story in the history of Warcraft? Did that affect any part of your process?
I will say lore and fantasy always does affect our process. It's something we always keep in mind when creating these characters. Those things are very important to our players, and it's a lot of the reason why people play Heroes of the Storm is because they want to feel that connection to that character, whether it's because they hate him or because they love him. Or I know there are a lot of Garrosh did nothing wrong lovers out there, right? So I definitely want to do justice for those people, or we as a team want to do justice for those people. And Garrosh was no exception to that. I know there were, I read Reddit, right? I see the concerns with him maybe not matching his fantasy, or people were expecting him to deal maybe a little bit more damage and be more of a bruiser type rather than a solo warrior type. For me, when approaching this, I knew, or as a team, we didn't really want the Shaw warrior, Mists of Pandaria Garrosh. That was never really on the table for us. We were much more enamored with the Warlords of Draenor Garrosh. And to me, that Garrosh is kind of this jerk, but in the best way possible, right? Like he's so mean, he's so aggressive, and he's just in your face, leading the front lines, isn't scared to back, scared of any fight. He doesn't back down. And when approaching this kit, that's what my goal was to do, right? Like, I didn't want him to be the type of warrior who could easily escape. I didn't want him to just be able to kind of dwarf toss out of a fight. I wanted him to be in there, in the front line, leading everyone. Not so much maybe always protecting the squishies, but being able to dictate where the fight goes, where the battles are. And that was a lot of the inspiration for his kit.
Did you ever just feel tempted to have an exploding star no matter what? Because that's his thing, you know, and it seems like his gimmick. I'll bet that's a bit of a temptation across the board. But with Garrosh specifically, was there a time in his process where there was an exploding star, an iron star?
So iron star, I'll be honest, it was definitely a missed opportunity. At the time designing his kit, I was looking for ideas that added to his effectiveness as a solo warrior. And an AoE taunt was very much that, right? Warlord's Challenge was definitely that huge tanking moment. And Decimate, really, what I wanted to do there was really showcase Gorehowl and allow it to deal a lot of damage to enemy heroes and kind of allow him to stick and be kind of just always in the battle. And so that was the goal with that. Iron Star, from a fantasy standpoint, I don't think you could do it with it without it dealing like some sort of insane amount of damage, and that had concerned me. With that said, looking back on it, I was actually talking to our lead Kenderic about this. I think there is a world where he could have had Iron Star. I'm sure there's ways we could have solved that as a team, but you know, you definitely live and you learn, and we'll definitely think about this for sure.
Yeah, and he, in my mind, the exploding Iron Star was always maybe, if it was ever in anyone's mind, it was maybe in as a heroic or as an ultimate. And the fact that it's not in there, I'm actually kind of coming to terms with it as a player. So this is more of a personal note, but I like this idea that this is a raw form of Garrosh. This isn't Garrosh Hellscream with all the conniving and plans from a lore perspective, where he's got to figure out a way to build a super weapon that gives him a huge advantage if he goes back in time. Like, forget all that. This is just like war ready, buffed out, got two big fat tusks on his shoulder, ready to go, get into the fray and let's have it. And I think I'm cool with that. Like, that seems to be what his kit is built around. Is that sound right to you? Because that's the impression I get.
That's exactly right. You really said it really well. I mean, my goal and our goal was to make this orc who just really didn't give a damn about anyone. He's going to throw you around. He's going to stay in the fight for as long as possible. He's going to be just in there all the time. And that was definitely the goal. He is buffed out, right? Like, that's, I see this orc and I see this guy who's super strong and has this kind of strength about him. And that's what we were aiming for.
John, do you think you're ever going to get your Grom love on, or do you think this is it? This is a question that keeps coming up with us, but maybe you'll want to ask him about this very sensitive Grom question.
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, They're similar characters, right? They've got the similar silhouette. They fight with the same weapon, quite literally. Does Garrosh remove Grom from a potential role in the game, or is he still on the board, so to speak?
I would hate as a team to ever say any hero is off the board, because like I mentioned earlier, there are so many fans of Blizzard and Blizzard lore who have connections to different types of characters in our IPs. I would never want to say this hero is completely off the board. I can say we have no plans as of right now to do Grom, but who knows what the future holds.
Sure. It's like, to me, it's like skins. When the Amazon skin showed up for Nova, a lot of us just went, oh, well, I guess we'll never see an Amazon. And that turned out not to be the case.
Yeah.
So don't worry, everybody.
So I did Cassia too, so that's funny.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to when we can have like a father and sons. You know how we have all Protoss team and all Orc? We can have like all, we can have Father Big Brother Day or All Fathers and Sons Day. That sounds great.
Yeah.
I hope we see Grom.
That seems all right. Cool. So the feels like the separation between main tank and brawler is getting bigger, or at least in players' minds. Garrosh seems designed specifically with that sort of main tank role in mind. How deliberate was that? Is that part of his design? And did the game just need one? Because it's been a while.
Yes. So, we definitely look at our rosters of heroes and what we've been releasing, whether, you know, I mean, we had that stretch a while back where it was a whole bunch of assassins, right? We've definitely tried to remedy that. And so that's why you've seen more supports and more warriors coming in. And specifically a solo warrior. So we definitely went into Garrosh with him being a solo warrior in mind.
Well, I think that's awesome because it feels like it's been, I mean, how long has it been really? Has it been since Leoric maybe?
Well, Varian would be the last one,
oh,
I think.
Oh, Varian, yeah.
With the tanking spec, and then Dahaka, I think, is the one before that.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So high mobility and high burst has made frontline warriors' jobs a little bit harder, difficult to engage without being blown up, etc. And I guess the question is, do you see warriors' role in the meta shifting or changing with all of this? Specifically with the introduction of Garrosh, is he going to help in that way, or is that even on the table as an intent?
That's a tough question to answer. I'll say with Garrosh, I think his armor and his the way he engages and the ability to displace enemies, he does have a certain advantage over those compositions. When making him, that wasn't really intentional, but I think it's actually kind of worked out pretty well. At least internally, I can't actually say what it's been like on live yet, but we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Yeah. Is it hard to anticipate the meta like that? I mean, because you guys are making these characters, you know, roughly 9 months ahead of where it's released. And so it's got to be hard to say, okay, where are we going to be 9 months from now? What are we going to need?
Yeah, it is very, very hard to do that. And in fact, if we tried to do that, we would probably end up missing the mark probably 100% of the time, because by the time that hero ships in 9 months, the chances are the meta has actually shifted or changed. It may not have changed drastically, but it's probably changed. And so whatever our goals were with this meta changing hero, probably wouldn't hit the marks we were hoping for. So I think when we're looking at it, we're definitely looking at the roles more so than where the current meta is at, but we're always taking into consideration the current meta. And I really think, so we talked about like game designers and how specifically I was a hero designer. We also have our live and balanced designers, and they're constantly looking at, you know, live and HGC and seeing where the meta is at and seeing where we can make tweaks to heroes, to kind of help with the current meta if it needs to be addressed. Speaking personally, when designing hero talents, I definitely look at the meta there and say, okay, well, what can we maybe do to kind of help with the talents? But from a base kit perspective, not nearly as much. I think Garrosh's body check upgrade at 7, for example, is a good example of that, where it reduces healing, right? Like double support is kind of becoming a thing, and it's very potent. So introducing healing reduction into talents, which I think we've been doing over a few hero releases, is more prominent. And so that's a space where I feel like trying to maybe look at what the meta might be in 9 months is a little bit safer, but for base kits, it's probably a bad idea.
So let's talk about that real quick. You guys threw kind of a wrench into the spokes a little bit, and this happens once in a while. You know, Varian was interesting in terms of what he got to do at level 10. He kind of got to decide what sort of hero he's going to be for the rest of the game. In this case, you guys have thrown a whole new thing into the game, and that is this. He's the first hero with talent upgrades for an ability assigned to the one key. Essentially, he gets a fourth ability key at the top of the game and then ways to sort of enhance that later down the road. That seems super exciting, but also risky. I wonder if you could maybe talk to that a little bit.
Yeah, so he's definitely one of the only heroes to do that. But it was something we thought would be really a really cool opportunity to see how it worked out. So we always had the body check talent. That was definitely something we had designed early on. I thought it would be really cool to have an ability that kind of scaled with his armor. And then we decided to maybe take it a step further to add talents in addition to that at later levels to kind of modify that. And internally, it's kind of worked out pretty cool. And the thing I really like about it is none of the follow-up talents really feel mandatory if you take body check. They're more situational and adding additional functionality to that talent if you need it based on the team composition you're facing.
Mm. Do you think it's going to be viable to not? I mean, obviously, every talent build, you guys want them to be as viable as possible. Every potential build has either a built-in fun or a built-in utility. But it seems like such a must-pick to me. And I don't know why I feel that way necessarily, except it just seems like I want that extra ability and I want it early and I want to enhance it later.
So I am actually really happy to hear that, because everyone I've been watching on stream today since the patch has gone live has been taking the Warbreaker Q quest. Mm. And I was actually worried that the Q quest might be the lesser picked one. Of course, we'll see internally what everything actually shakes out to be once people get more time. So I really hope, and it's never our intention to make one a must pick over the other. So I'll just say, let's wait and see what happens.
Is this something that's going to be unique to Garrosh? Like, the multi-class is kind of unique to Varian. Is the talent upgrade on a talent that gives you an ability, then you can upgrade with talents, like a unique to Garrosh thing, at least for now? Or is it intended to be an experiment for future concepts potentially?
It is not only for Garrosh. This isn't something specific to him. If we find in the future that we're working on a hero, or even maybe if the live balance guys are working on an existing hero and they see a cool opportunity to modify a level one talent with different talent tiers, I would say it could happen. I don't think we have anything in the works right now, but it is an exclusive to Garrosh.
Okay. On that subject, I want to talk about the most exciting thing about Garrosh to me. It's Wrecking Ball. And the thing I want to find out most of all is I find that Wrecking Ball plays kind of like Genji's Deflect, where you're kind of like, you're trying to math out who you're going to hit, who's the nearest target. But in the end, a lot of times you're just eating in on Genji and like, hopefully it hits somebody relevant. It's too early for me to like have a strong opinion, but it feels a little bit like sometimes I'm chucking a minion when I want to chuck a hero. What led you to the decision to choose the targeting system?
So great question. And again, this comes from early playtesting. We actually used to have it not only prioritize closest, but also prioritize heroes, but we found it to be very oppressive, actually. In lane, there was very little enemies were actually able to do against Garrosh. He would basically be able to bully a lane and not allow people to hit their minions. If you were melee, good luck. There was absolutely no counterplay to it at all. And it just felt disgusting to play against. It wasn't fun. It wasn't engaging. The Garrosh player wasn't smart about his positioning. He didn't have to think about it at all. He just had to walk up to a hero and throw them. And so in the laning phase, because you have your towers and low levels, what it actually ended up doing was allowing you to get an early kill almost guaranteed, because you would just walk up in your lane, throw someone towards your towers, and the towers at level one are dealing so much damage to your heroes that you would just end up snowballing the game, really, because they would come back into lane at a level disadvantage. And it just ended up not working out as well. Not working out as well as we had hoped.
Sure.
So if I understand correctly, it was to put a tier of skill and contemplation into the ability rather than make it click point and click that guy and then move him over.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, so yeah. So it definitely point click was okay. So that's actually an interesting thing. So point click was actually something we had discussed, but one, you definitely have, it makes it much easier to use, which we kind of just discussed about, but it also had an additional casting process to the ability, which made it actually feel a little bit clunky, because not only did you have to click on the target you were going to throw, but then you were going to have to click where you wanted to throw them. So it was this two-step process rather than this one-step process of throwing whoever was closest to you. And because he has that Q groundbreaker, which leads very well into his wrecking ball, you wanted to be able to do that combo as fast as possible. So I pull someone in and then I get to throw them where I want. If I did that pull and then I had to click on them and then throw them where I wanted to, it ends up feeling a little clunky.
Mm-hmm. And also, I kind of like the chaoticness of it. It fits with Garrosh's, again, his whole vibe of just like, brah! And if he happens to pull a wizard and throw him over there, all right, well, that's what you get when you're the, you know, chaos lord of Azeroth and you want to kill everything.
And we definitely try, that's absolutely correct. And we definitely wanted to reduce the frustration points with it. So it very specifically only hits heroes, minions, and mercenaries. So it doesn't hit summons. So Anubarak's not going to be countering them. It doesn't hit map monsters like on Infernal Shrines, right? The skeletons aren't going to be blocking it. So if you're in a big skirmish team fight on Infernal Shrines, you don't have to worry about throwing the skeletons. You're still very valuable at those team fights.
Mm. Okay. One more follow-up question about Wrecking Ball. How much Red Bull were you guys drinking when you decided to make the talent into the fray? Like, was it... Was it too much? And then you're like, well, it's in the game. Can't take it out.
We've
like, it seems
too
crazy.
Far. We can't
it's
back.
Amazing. I'm so excited for the possibilities. But of course, people kind of see the negatives. Great. If someone feels like they're losing the game, they're just going to throw me into the enemy tower. So what made you make the bold decision to include something as cool as this? Because I think it's amazing.
So I have been personally in love with this. One, I will say, yes, we are absolutely scared of what this can mean, but at the same time, I personally, and I think quite a few on the team are enamored with the possibilities of this ability and what it means for esports and what it means for big playmaking potentials and what you can do with it, throwing in a mouth who goes into a Twilight Dream. There's all so many cool plays, saving an ally who's maybe about to get hit by a triple tap, right? I think we saw that in the spotlight video. The biggest thing and the biggest reason I really wanted to chase this particular talent was I really wanted to see the big play potentials. I think there's a lot of fun moments that will be seen with this. And hopefully, I know there's concerns about the trolling aspect with the ability. I really hope that the potential of the ability outweighs those trolls. And this is another one where being close to Garrosh kind of gives your allies a way to, if they don't want to be thrown by Garrosh, kind of step outside of that range so they don't have to worry about getting trolled. That doesn't always work out, but at least you have a way to kind of move away from it. Whereas if we did a targeted one, for example, there's nothing you could do. And so that's, again, why we went with a proximity base throw.
So we've spent, I don't know, probably 3 or 4 episodes talking about Varian and his taunt ability. And I wanted to make sure today we at least touched on this idea that Garrosh is now getting an AoE version of this thing. Some people have said it's too strong in the Varian case, that it would ultimately get nerfed all to heck and back. And now here we are with a character who can not only taunt, but do it in a way that gets multiple people in serious trouble. I'm really excited about it, but we're wondering what ultimately led to the decision to include a second taunt ability into the game in addition to Varian's. And what do you anticipate the impact of that being? Like, how do you see that as a heroic and late game playing out?
So with the Varian comparison, I'll go ahead and address that one first. I think Garrosh and Varian approach their taunts very differently. Varian is a single target. It's targeted, and he also has mobility. He has a targeted charge and a targeted taunt, which makes it very... very easy to get, frankly. Like, it's definitely an easy follow-up when you charge in on someone to get that taunt. And it's also low cooldown. because it is a single target taunt. So from the balance side, that, you know, that kind of makes sense. Whereas Garrosh's, his is a much shorter range. He doesn't have that mobility. He doesn't have an ability to charge in, right? If he does want to get a guaranteed one off, he kind of has to land his skill shot Q that has the pool only on the outer edge. So it does require a little bit more setup to get that AoE taunt off, but it does have a bigger benefit if you're able to get a lot more heroes inside of it. And it's kind of this risk reward thing for him. I've definitely seen some people whiff it today in streams, which is good. So I will say it's a little bit easier to avoid as a taunt than maybe Varian's is. So hopefully it doesn't end up feeling maybe as bad. And it's also on a longer cooldown, right? So that definitely helps.
So if he, I guess this is a dumb question, but if he throws his area taunt and after that's been cast, Could a sneaky Varian jump in and then taunt Garrosh and blow the whole deal? You know,
I'm trying to think how that. Taunt? No, so it doesn't actually interrupt the taunt. So if you were to taunt some people and an enemy Varian were to taunt that Garrosh would be forced to attack Varian, but those enemies who were taunted by Garrosh would still be attacked.
Okay, so it's probably. I mean, I guess I've probably seen mirror matches and quick match where maybe a taunt Varian did this to a taunt Varian and just didn't notice, but that's good to know. No taunt inception is what you're telling me. That's good.
No, I don't think we have any tauntception.
Scott just likes the idea of two people just yelling at each other.
Yelling, there's silence, nobody can do anything.
And I forgot to answer one part of that question where why the AoE taunt. It was mostly actually a fantasy thing for me chasing, and I was also looking. We were also looking for a good warrior heroic, and I just thought to myself, like, what's more badass than having Garrosh basically challenge everyone around him to attack him? Right? He's like, I don't give a shit. You know, excuse my language. I just don't care. Just go ahead and attack me, right?
You're excused.
Thank you. So I just thought it was we thought it would be a really cool opportunity for it.
So the groundbreaker effect, the Q.
Yes.
It's reminiscent of other abilities in the game that other characters have, like Cho's heroic is similar in terms of look and stuff. Yeah. But that sort of edge case thing where it's a little more skill based, if they're on the edge of that thing, it pulls them in close, is a really interesting twist on a familiar mechanic. I assume that was also intentional to try to, you know, skill that out a little bit so that it wasn't just another suck everybody to me sort of ability that a lot of heroes share.
Yeah, so one, it was definitely to separate it from maybe other similar mechanics, like Shows Up People is a very good example of that. But two, it was to make the Q to E not so automatic, right? Because if it hit that whole area, just imagine how much easier it would be to actually get heroes right next to you and then just immediately throw them. That combo is so potent. We really want players to work for that, right? If you're going to get that Q into the E, then you need to work for it. You need to be able to pull on the outer edge of it, aim your Q a little bit better, and then follow up with the E. And so that was really the goal behind it. Was really just to add a skill component to a pretty good CC, and then also a great CC follow up.
So you've talked about a couple of we only got a couple more questions, and this one I think is an important one. Competitive heroes matters. What happens in the esport matters, and you talked earlier about how some of these new abilities, parts of his kit, are going to really set up some really interesting, fun, incredible playmaking moments. And that's all really exciting. How do you see him in competitive, or what are you hoping from Garrosh in competitive, either right away or long term, or, you know, where do you want to see him, let's say, in 6 months?
So I would definitely love to see him just fill out a role on a team composition, just maybe as the only warrior, as our goal for a solo warrior implies. And a lot of that is because if we're seeing different warriors, that means there are more choices on the board, right? That we don't always, you know, excuse me, if other heroes are getting banned or not getting banned, it leaves different team compositions available. And that's always nice when you see different team compositions in the pro level and people using these compositions in different ways. It's a lot more fun for the viewer. And as a designer, I love to see those things.
Yeah. In ranked and in even unranked draft mode, it's usually a pretty good prediction. that the first week or so of a new hero, autobans are coming. People don't have a reference point yet for what Garrosh is going to do to the mix. They're more comfortable just saying, just go with what we know. Let's just autoban Garrosh. He's first draft or first ban in almost every one of those games. And that's been true of most new heroes for a long time. And sometimes it sticks for a long time where you'll see, you know, Li Ming. I remember the long Li Ming drought where she just got banned every game forever, it felt like. And I foresee this with him. Does that worry you guys at all? Do you guys ever go, oh man, I wish these guys would just let him into their unranked draft or their ranked draft modes and just play the guy and not be afraid of him until they've seen an HCC match? Maybe that's just nothing you can ever control, but that is
a really hard thing to control because how, you know, players' perception is going to drive ranked and unranked drafts, and there's really not a whole lot we can do about that. I think as players, you know, get used to playing against those types of heroes, then maybe they're a little bit more comfortable with not banning them. But a lot of it is the unfamiliarity with those new heroes that they just don't want to have to deal with them. One kind of, you know, upside to that, if you're looking at it optimistically, is it opens up different heroes that might have been banned instead of them. So we get to see those heroes get pulled in, like a Li Ming or whatever, right? So that part of it's nice. But of course, when I'm watching streams and people play Hero League, yeah, I want to see them play the new hero. But I just don't, I don't know that there's a perfect solution for fixing that.
Do you guys ever plan on having these themed teams? Like, for example, I think Bo was mentioning it earlier, this idea of an all family team would be interesting, but now we have, with Garrosh added to the mix, I think we have a full viable, pretty competitive, you could argue, comp of orcs. And that's super interesting from a sort of like, you know, fun perspective. Like, let's do that. We do it with StarCraft characters sometimes. And it looks like finally we have our Warcraft comp of orcs in a way that they would make them a really powerful competitive team. Do you guys think about that ahead of time? Or is that just pure gravy at the end of the day? And you're like, oh, well, that worked out nice. We have this really cool lineup of five guys we didn't really intend.
You know, that you said it best. It is pure gravy. And sometimes we don't even realize it. And then, you know, it'll just happen by chance in those morning design playtests that we're in that we see, you know, three orcs on the hero select screen as we're queuing up to play some of people internally. And they were like, wait a minute, can we actually get five competitive orcs on this team? And sure enough, with the addition of Garrosh, we were able to do that. And it's just one of those things that happens, and it feels really cool because you're rolling around with your horde orc buddies and just kind of destroying the other team. Well, not me. I seem to lose a lot, but you know, ideally you're destroying the enemy team.
So do you have a favorite thing about Garrosh? Like, if you had to, I don't know, sit back and go, all right, he's got a cool kit, he does all these cool things, here's my number one thing I like about him the most.
I mean, I absolutely, well, man, that's, I love Wrecking Ball. I absolutely love Wrecking Ball. I think End of the Fray is going to be an awesome addition as well. We kind of talked about that. But his trait, Armor Up, I'm really excited about because it does make him so deceptively tanky, and it really allows him to stick into fights far longer than maybe he should be able to. And just being able to bait enemies with that is pretty cool because I don't think anyone really knows how much they need to actually kill Garrosh, and that's kind of fun.
It is. One other thing I'd say about that is we haven't really talked about his trait very much, so I'm glad you mentioned this. That's the kind of trait I love the most because there's a simplicity to it. I don't have to do a lot to make it do its job, but it does this incredible mechanic thing that's happening, that's important, that is something you have to account for if you're the other team or your own team. Like, it's one you have to think about, but there's no special buttons. You don't have to go crazy and hit it at the right moment. It's just sort of happening. It's part of his lifestyle. And I think that's a really cool way that's working out for him. And those are usually my favorite implementations. Is there ever a temptation to go nuts with a trait where it's always got to have a D push and it's got to be timed right and all that stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. There's always that. Well, speaking from, you know, personal experience, there's always that temptation to go over the top with traits and have it do all. As a designer, you're like, oh, I'm going to do this and do that and do this and do that. And you try and add in all this complexity. But at the end of the day, it you kind of lose a lot from it when you try and do too much with an ability. And so when we can do these more simple traits, it's really nice because while maybe just looking at it on paper, mate, you're like, oh, okay, that seems pretty simple. But for Garrosh, it actually has a lot of implications with how he plays. And like you said, it turns out being very interesting, especially with like his Bloodthirst W, right? The interaction there is really cool. It's like that makes him a lot stronger at lower health than people may actually realize. And so there are just little cool things there. And it, you know, that trait, not just from a Garrosh standpoint, it makes him really good with a Stukov or a Malfurion or a Tassadar, a Zarya, right? Because it really, the longer he can sustain that low health, the stronger he's going to be. So shields are really good on him. You know, that sustained healing is really good on him. So it has a lot of fun implications there.
So I think we have to really get to the root of all the issues here. Possibly the most important question of the night. Really cool skin came in with Garrosh. Yeah. Mad Axe Garrosh, maybe inspired by a movie. I don't know, similar at least. And it leads to the most important question of the night. Whose face mask smells worse, Mad Axe Garrosh, Immortan Joe, or Nazebo?
Oh, that's a tough question. That might be the hardest one you've asked me all night.
Yeah. We really threw you a curveball with that Nazebo bit.
I mean, they're all rough. Nazebo yells a lot. So does Garrosh, though.
Yeah, Garrosh loves the yell. Man, it's got to be Joe, though, right? Like, that guy is nasty. It's Joe.
I'm glad we got you thinking about what it'd be like to wake up next to him and smell his morning breath and be like, that guy needs dental work.
I mean, in my head, it's a mental picture of me taking each of their masks off and kind of getting little sniff, right? So I'm just like, yeah, it's not pleasant, and I'm gonna have nightmares.
Yeah,
now, so
none of these
waking up in bed with them was my thing.
Yeah,
I assumed everyone imagined it the same way I did.
Sure, but yeah. either way, we gave you three very bad choices, and I think you've made the right one. I cannot thank you enough for being with us, Jade. Thank you so much for being here, and I know you can't tell us what you're working on next because those things are all big secrets and stuff, but I hope whatever it is, it's something you have this same kind of excitement for. I always feel this way when we interview people at Blizzard on various games, especially the Heroes team. There's so much excitement around these heroes, and you guys sort of exemplify that. So thanks for sharing that with us, not just your answers, but just this sense of, I don't know, great excitement you guys have for the work.
Absolutely, guys. I love what I do. I love bringing all these heroes to the fans of Blizzard to play, and it's a great honor. So don't take it lightly. And I can't wait for you guys to see what I'm working on next. So it's been a pleasure.
Grom Hellscream, guys. They all heard it here. Grom Hellscream. Well, thanks again, Jade, and thanks for spending the time with us. We really appreciate it. All right, guys, interviews behind us. Let's talk instead now about Fnatic winning the HGC Western Clash without dropping a game. I actually didn't like these matches. Do you want to know why?
Okay, why?
Because I think they're too good. That kind of that kind of dominance is not good for any game. This is the way it goes sometimes when a team's good enough to be that dominant. But, man, there was no, I'd like to see a little resistance. And they didn't really have much. None of it was very resistant to Fnatic's stomping. So it's not a complaint about the game or the esport or any of that. It's just, all right, Fnatic, we get it. Ease off a little. You guys are killing everybody. You're my team even. You're the ones I root for. But gosh dang it. Maybe a little competition, you know? Is that too much to ask?
I like that you're asking him to throw games. Like a really nice way of being like, hey, could you throw it?
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Just Pete Rose this a little bit and get us where we need to go. But anyway, that's been crazy. It was also the first run of that Twitch cheer system. John, did you cheer? Did you like that?
I cheered. You know what it taught me when I had to spend money to cheer? I learned that I'm a big fan of Europe, apparently, because Fnatic and Dignitas that I spent my cheers on.
Did you
Dignitas wasn't even there. I felt really dumb because here's a tournament they're not in at all. Yeah. They didn't make it to the Clash, and I'm sitting there going, "Woo, Dignitas! Woo, do it!"
By the way, I don't know if have you seen the live stats for this cheering business?
No, how'd it go?
I posted in the Skype chat if you wanted to take a look there.
Surely.
There's been 11, as of right now, there's 11,844,235 bits cheered.
Is that a lot of bits?
Well, a bit is like a penny worth of value, I think. I mean, I think they take their cut when they buy it. I have cheered zero in my lifetime, so I have no.
Oh, so we're past the mount stage. There's a mount unlocked at this point.
Oh, cool. Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff to be unlocked. Oh, yeah, there's a mount here at 10 million. It looks like a horned Kodo. A different horned Kodos,
correct. Those are all Kodos. They're horned, and there are three of them. That is correct.
I'm not sure what they are. Mm. But 11 million, I think, is, if I, it's like $100,000, $118,000.
Mm.
And a cut of that goes to Blizzard. Cut of that goes to the teams. Top team is Fnatic, and they've had...
Oh, my gosh. They have whatever most that of them. Is,
22,000. Well, it's 22 million... No, 2.2 million bits their way.
Yeah, 2.2 million bits. Almost double that of the next team, which is Dignitas.
So that's about 22,000, which means they're getting, I guess, 10 grand out of this, you know, which is cool.
Yeah,
cool.
Sure. Whatever helps the teams. Yeah. Do you think these are in line with what they wanted, though? Does this feel like these seem like big numbers to me, but I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, I mean, there are people cheering right now, I think.
Are there people?
yeah, people spending money. Like, you see the cheers in the
chat. Oh, yeah. You're right. They are, right? There's people doing it now.
Yeah, and they're not even streaming. Unless that's, like, there's no games right now. Or something. I don't know what's going on. Yeah, it's weird. Like, I think it's cool, but also... I don't know. I'm part of... Like, I'm young enough to like Twitch and love what Twitch doing.
Yeah.
I'm too old to get the appeal of Twitch chat whatsoever. Yeah. It's like, wait, this mess of numbers and letters? You can put colorful things in it and it just streams right by.
Yeah.
Like, I get supporting the teams. It's kind of like Patreon for teams
a little bit, except I feel like Patreon, you can, it's easier to wrap your head around because it's like support for a thing that you like. So this is you saying and I guess that's no different here. It's just you get this like fun, goofy, celebratory way to use it.
Yeah. Because if the audience values it, I'm imagining it's younger folks, I guess, or someone. Like, we all have a line where we're like, you know, I'm too old for this. And I'm just like,
I don't know if I'm too old for it. I think it's just, it's like a cultural thing within Twitch, and it's just an accepted thing. So it's like, it's like if you go to a certain basketball venues, it's, the tradition is to wave those stupid things while people are trying to make free throws. Same thing with, like, you know, certain hockey games. It's tradition to throw bologna on the ice. That's probably not a real thing. I just made up. But
yeah, that's what all hockey people do.
Yeah,
throw bologna. Scott, this is why we don't talk about sports. You're breaking the first law of sports.
But I will say, though, that, like, yeah, you're right. But we don't pay ticket prices when we go to see live sports events for Heroes. So, like, this is a revenue generating way. So I don't want to poo-poo it too much. I think it's awesome.
No, I'm not poo-pooing it at all. I don't understand necessarily the appeal. But I'm glad that it exists and that it's working. And it'd be cool if somebody could say whether these numbers are in line with what they had hoped from this arrangement.
So John, did you say, because as the only person who's cheered officially here, you know, how did it make you feel? What's your report from the front?
I told you,
I felt silly because I'm going, yay, Dignitas, and they're not even playing. I don't know. I felt. But it was neat. I saw a little meter fill up and I unlocked rewards that I don't know how to use because I'm young enough to be into cheering, but not young enough to understand how to use any of the things I unlock. So Twitch chat's like, yeah, look at all our emotes. And I'm like, I don't know how to do this. I clicked the smiley face and there's no emotes for teams in there. I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
Well, part of it is you don't have the expendable time to then sit there and dink with it all night long and ask 50 Redditors what to do next. Like, it should either just sort of be obvious or not, or else we just probably don't have the same kind of time.
I mean, like, look, all I care about is the in-game stuff. I don't want to type a Dignitas emote in Twitch chat. Like, I can go about my life without ever having to do that. That's probably fine.
The top cheer here on the Heroes page is by RobDog222, and it's $749 worth of bits, or maybe more.
Oh, my lord.
74,900 from one user. That's crazy, man. That's fandom.
That's fandom for sure. You know, again, can't poo-poo it. Like, if that's where your fandom is... What do they always say in the free-to-play world? It all relies on the whales of the industry, the people who are spending the most, so that the rest of us can be freeloaders.
The thing is, like, 11 million sounds like a lot of bits cheered, but I actually don't know. like the frame of reference, you know, something like in internet stuff. It's like, oh, I have 5 million bytes. It's like, that's 5 megs. It's not a big deal, you know. Like, I don't know. It just sounds like a lot when you say 11 million bits are cheered.
Yeah.
But I can, in the big and small, I'm not sure what the impact is of that. If that means it's good or not.
Yeah. It's, we'll say it's good.
Yeah, we'll say, it's,
we'll
good.
We'll just say it's good.
I think good is good. All right, so there's that. Let's talk about some patch changes since we last hung out. No Hanamura. It's been pulled from all modes of play. Not just ranked rotation. It's going to be reworked. So maybe John's long national nightmare may be over, I guess.
I think this is a way for both Bo and I to get what we want. This is the last time we're going to talk about Hanamura for a long time. Should make Bo happy. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy because I don't have to play on Hanamura anymore.
I'm unhappy that the most recent map in Heroes of the Storm has been pulled from all rotations for rework. That makes me sad because it means really good work and ideas that a bunch of people worked on is not being received well, to the point that they have to pull it out and work on it. And that's good. It's a positive thing that they're going to work on it and all of that. But I feel a little bad. It's kind of like you had to have Titan crash in order to get Overwatch. It's kind of that feeling, you know? It's not quite that big.
No, I think it's good. Like, because look at it this way. First of all, look, I'm excited that we got Hanamura. As much as I hate that map, and I might hate that map more than most people, I'm glad they took a chance on it. I'm glad they're willing to try new things. I hope they continue to be willing to try new things. But I'm also glad that they were eventually able, maybe a little too long of a wait, to turn around and say, ah, it's not working. Let's pull it. Let's fix it. Let's get it into something that will work. I love so much about that map, except playing on it, that now they're just going to hopefully fix it. And I know there's a real kind of negative way of looking at it, of saying like, well, yeah, but they did that with Haunted Mines, and Haunted Mines hasn't gotten much better. But, you know, we'll see what happens. Hopefully, at the end of the day, we get a better map out of the deal. And that's what I want, is just a better map.
Okay. Bo, any additional thoughts there?
Well, at last show, I said I was sick of talking about it. You know, I really went hyper diaper on, you know.
John, wait. Can you describe John hyper? What is hyper diaper? What is hyper diaper?
I don't know. It's funny because it rhymes. But I got hyper diaper.
Baby disease.
I got hyper diaper about the fact that John had put in the show notes Hanamura, and it wasn't his fault. He's a podcaster. He wants to bring content to our show.
Yeah.
And I kind of went on off the deep end because I it is how I felt. Like I don't, you know, it's so all that to say is great. You know, if whether it's founded or not, it doesn't matter. The community's decided, for better or for worse, they don't like it. Think it's the right call just to take it out of the equation and work on it. I'm not so invested in, no, keep Hanamura in, don't give in to the fans. What do they know?
Yeah.
Listen to me. Like, it's, you know, I'm okay, fine. But I want to see a new map. I've still, at some point, I think in our past, we talked about we'd like to see tweaks to maps with the frequency of hero balance changes. And I'm kind of hoping there's some groundwork being laid for a faster map delivery. Like, even 3 times a year, like, we know when to expect heroes in a schedule. It'd be nice to expect 3 maps a year.
Well, we're not. We're not expecting one every 3 weeks, but yeah, like one, you know, two, like one per quarter, maybe, or maybe even just 3 total a year. Like, that'd be great. And it'd be great to know when, you know.
What feels bad is that that's the last one added. So literally the new content in the game pulled out.
Yeah.
So we've had no new content now since Towers of Doom.
Well,
because it's not good.
I'm like, that's fine. I don't want to talk about that. You can talk about that. You can take as much time on the show to talk about it as you like, sir.
Hey,
I just mean,
Bo.
Yeah.
More like Han no more.
Han loves Leia. Wait, wrong.
I'm not like, I don't want to be a Holocaust denier.
Holocaust denier.
Your pun encroaching on some dangerous territory.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not a Holocaust denier, but it's the new content that was put into the game that was immediately pulled out. Feels bad. Capital F, capital B. capital M for man or W for woman.
It's like Facebook.
Wow, these are a lot of letters.
Just say P, person. Well, because feels bad man is the emote, right? But it should be really feels bad person.
Sure, like, being, sure.
But anyway,
but sometimes
I'm rambling now.
It's like so mankind. It's fine. But here's the deal here. I think you both have really valid points here. I think I side more with Bo on the feels bad part. It's not, obviously it wasn't immediate. If it was immediate, we wouldn't have had it for all those weeks, months now. How long have we had it? 2 months? 3 months? How long has 2.0 been out? More than that, right? It's been a while. Yeah. So I feel like they gave it enough time to let things sink in, to tweak it once and see if that fixed things, maybe even twice, I can't remember. And so I'm okay with them doing that. But yeah, I'm more bummed. You know, when this interview earlier in the show, just as a reminder of how passionate and stoked these guys are. Like, they love what they're doing. They sound like they have the most amazing jobs ever. Come in the morning and start playtesting your damn kit. It sounds like such a blast. What a fun thing. Somebody put their heart and soul into Hanamura, and it didn't work out. Even if it's sound and people just can't get their heads around it, whatever the reason is, even if it's pure perception that they pulled it, which is entirely possible, and John, you know, is the tip of that spear, it doesn't matter. Either way, somebody who threw their guts into it has had to basically go back to the drawing board, and that I don't like, even though it's a thing I probably shouldn't worry about. But, you know, it's they're smart, creative people, and you feel bad when they're not getting what they want out of their thing. So it's good that we'll be getting something better. Also, what we're getting is less mirror matches. I had heard no more mirror matches originally and got really excited, but it turns out as often as possible, they will not mirror match you. Because there will be some exceptions probably. Now, my thinking is this is stage two of a three-stage process. As the game has grown in population, this allows them to start not having things that are annoying in the game like mirror matching and quick match. The only way that works is if you've got enough population to justify it. That must mean that they're getting there. So if they've got the population they need to mostly do it, stage three is when they completely eliminate that and you never see another mirror match again. I don't know when that will be, but I see this as far more than just a nice quality of life improvement in quick match. I see this as a huge bit of news about how things are going behind the scenes for Heroes. This is a growth mile marker, in my opinion, and I'm stoked about it.
And for the record, the reason it's less and not no more is because of days like today. Everybody wants to play Garrosh.
Yeah.
If they said under no circumstances can we have two teams with Garrosh on it, the already incredibly long queues are going to become insanely long queues. And so they said, okay, look, the system's going to try really hard not to do it. But if you're going to be waiting for half a century for a game, you might run into it. Yeah. So it's probably going to be a problem during quick match or when a new hero launches or if a hero becomes really popular, but it should still probably avoid seeing it. And honestly, even if it's just less across the board, it feels like the current system now seems to favor it. Yeah. I played Tyrande yesterday, and granted, she's becoming slightly popular, but I played Tyrande in a bunch of quick match games. I think I played 6 or 7, and I think there was another Tyrande on the enemy team 4 of those games.
Wow.
So it's going to be a very nice change if that's something you don't want to see.
Yeah, and I'm okay if it's for the next little bit, it's a bunch of Garrosh Hellscreams mirror matched, as long as the rest of the team, they make efforts to not have that happen. Now, obviously, you can't control situations where there's 5 stacks or even 3 stacks like us, where somebody's Garrosh, somebody's another popular hero, and the third healer is a popular healer. You're probably going to see that more than most, but this to me does seem like something they couldn't do without the right population being in place. I think it's a good sign of the health of the game. Bo, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I think so. I like that it prefers, because that way they're also not beholden to an exact rule, like, yeah, as you said, with the new hero releases. So
that's true.
Yeah, no, I'm good with this. I hate mirror matches.
I do too. They drive me crazy. Yeah. Not a fan. You know what I least like in a mirror match is Karazim v. Karazim. I hate it. Hate it.
It's because you're the one playing Karazim.
Well, partly, but also there's something about that particular mirror match. Like, I can do Jaina v. Jaina. I can deal with that. Jaina v. Jaina sounds dirty. I apologize.
Yeah, Jaina v. Jaina. Like, no one says no to that.
Like, I'm going to say versus from now on and not v. Jaina. Anyway, I don't mind some of those matchups if I had to. I mean, I'd prefer not to do them at all, but there's something about Karazim when he's one-on-one that I cannot stand. It just feels like pissing in the wind. I hate it. All right, so there's that. What else? Oh, no more weak Dragon Knights. So if you thought your Dragon Knight was a big wiener, not so much. He's buffed back up during the Stukov patch. This actually already happened. And do we know what they did? What'd they do? Made him more strong-like?
Yeah, I didn't. He's a more strong-like hero. They increased his strong-likeness by about 30%, and his cool dude stats by 57.
Wow, that's a hell of a bump.
I will pull up exactly what they did to him, but I actually noticed this, and I couldn't really put my finger on it because I was like, man, this Dragon Knight seems to be killing people. Maybe people have just gotten better being the Dragon Knight lately. But I saw him getting kills, and it felt like he was taking out buildings better. I was just like, all right, well, I guess everybody's just better at being the Dragon Knight now. It's about time. Oh, turns out he now deals double damage to minions. His base health was increased. His starting duration is increased from 50 to 55 seconds. His weapon swing is more responsive. His fire breath does more damage, and it happens. He does his full damage in half the time that it took previously. His charge no longer has a 0.25 second damage delay after punting the target, and the base damage of the punt has gone up from 300 to 450.
Jeez. Okay. Wow. Yeah. Buff across the board for the Dragon Knight. Does he still... This is something I've always asked for. Does he... When you go to boot somebody, they see a target variant. Is it possible to make it... Here's a request, Blizzard. Can you make it so he prefers Nova if she's nearby? So even if I target Varian, he'll just peel off the other direction and kick Nova if she's in view? That'd be great. Freaking hate
I like that. Nova rule.
I'm the new John with the Nova thing. I freaking hate Nova so bad. I hate her.
She's ruining your day right now.
Yeah, lately, last few games, she's in every one of them and making my life hard. I played some solo stuff that I don't want to talk about.
There's a lot of Novas this week. It's insane.
Yeah.
Like, who are all these people with no souls that are playing Nova?
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
So many awesome new... Play Genji. Like, there's... Yeah.
Yeah, they should come out and say all hero abilities, golem abilities, like any like AI-controlled lane stuff, bosses, all that stuff, mercs, all of them should now prefer Nova. Just automatically... Just Nova preferable. That's how you nerf Nova without nerfing her. There you go. Take
Does
my
Nova
idea.
Need a nerf?
No, she needs to not be existing.
She needs deleted.
Yeah, she needs to be go away. Twitch Prime members are getting legendary loot boxes, or as one might say, well, I already got mine, I guess, but it hasn't shown up yet. So I went and did the thing you're supposed to do for it, and I don't have it yet. So
well, that's because it's August 17th.
But oh, that's the day it does. I thought you said to sign up before then. You got it immediately. Okay, my bad then. So as of that day, because I went and clicked the thing, and it took me to a place and says, "Make sure your account's linked." It is. Make sure you do click this thing. I did, and then I went and checked the game, and there was nothing. So it must have just meant I'm ready to go for the 17th.
You're ready to go. Right now, I think it's Overwatch. You get a guaranteed legendary in Overwatch if you're right now. I think 17th is when it switches over to Heroes.
Oh, maybe that's where I'm confused. All right. So I should go over there now because their summer thing started, and I could potentially get a legendary summer skin over there.
Maybe.
I could get Soldier 76 dad skin, which is amazing.
Could be.
I want that thing real bad.
I feel like that whole summer thing in Overwatch, Heroes was like, hey guys, we got a new, and then Overwatch jumped in and slapped Heroes on the mouth and was like, no guys, summer's here.
Yeah, and summer's over here. We have a whole game mode and McCree's got no shirt on with a straw hat. Woo! It's pretty good.
Don't you guys love summer? I know it was summer in your game a little while ago, but now it's summer here. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Hey guys, I'm Overwatch. I didn't have to try as hard.
Well, technically they started it last year, right? They were the first summer thing, I think.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah. So anyway, whatever.
If you want to get grumpy about it.
Rob, you got to rob Ringo to pay Paul. All right, moving on. What else? Was that it with that? Yeah. So we'll get that soon. Oh, hey, did you guys know we invented I say we. I can't take credit for this, but let's say John. Was it your idea, John? Oh, I'm going to say John invented it.
There were
it was a committee.
Four or five people that put it together. I no longer remember whose idea it was to create this brawl, so we can all take credit for it.
Yeah.
But we kind of designed a brawl.
It was called, it is and will always be called in my heart, Battle for the Bullion. They've decided to call it Booty Coffers. Blizzard literally made a brawl. It's basically the Battle of the Bullion thing we did for the charity with a few tweaks. Some of these you like, some of them you don't. I want to get into that in a second. But, I mean, are we just blowing smoke here? We just had a cool idea. It just happens that Blizzard also did a cool thing. Or can we really take credit?
No, I can. I won't out anybody in case it would get them in trouble. But I will say I have heard from Blizzard. This idea was generated from what we were doing for Heroes Charity Brawl.
Yeah.
It was shown to designers and they ran with it.
Nice.
So
nice.
It is not Battle for the Bullion, but it was definitely inspired by it. So
I'm gonna pat myself on the back.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather use this for Battle of the Bullion. I think they've optimized it in a good way. There's these giant coffers now that have like 16 coins in them. So you get your coins faster, camps drop 5, and when the coffers spawn, Blackheart fires cannons at them. That's amazing. That's perfect. It's just the kind of thing that I like where I'm just like, oh, let me very calmly get these things. Oh, I'm dead. Oops, there was a cannonball that hit me. I like that quite a bit.
Yeah.
The one sad part is part of the fun of Battle for the Bullion is having someone literally drop 100 coins on the map.
Yeah.
And because you can turn them in, you never get that satisfying 100 coins on the ground. But people still carry a lot of coins. So it's
and you do see an explosion of coins out of the coffer. But I'm with you. You actually nailed it exactly. Like the firing at cannons at chest, how many coins are in the chest, that's all stuff that I love about this. But I am a little sad because I think the idea, and again, I don't remember who came up with it, but the idea behind it was, wouldn't it be awesome if we had a brawl where you had to have somebody carrying a bunch of coins, and when they died, you just saw a massive amount of coins fly out of them. That's what got us on the right track. And so that part is gone. So I think that would be the only thing I wished, is if there was some way where it was like, you can't turn in until there's 100 coins in play or something like that.
Actually, the main argument that we had coming up with this year's Heroes Charity Brawl was that I wanted to increase it to 200 to 300.
Yeah.
And everyone else is like, you can't do that, Bo. That's too much. And I'm like, no, listen to me. You have to make it the goal 200. It has to be 500. Yeah. How many coins can Johanna fit in her armor? That's what we want to find out with this brawl.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, reason, you know, carried out.
Maybe.
I want 200 coins. I want 500 coins on a person.
It may be a performance thing. I don't know. I mean, we never seem to have any trouble with it, yeah. But
I'm okay with breaking the game client when we're coming up with these charities. Yeah. Not a concern for me.
Yeah. But I could just see that happening in QA where it's like, oh, guys, when you pop 100 coins, that's, we got a frame rate problem. Let's back that up some or something. Who knows?
Maybe.
But I love the fact that it got in there. I love that we have independent confirmation that it was inspired by us. And I think that's rad. And, they should take all our ideas. We should have a Dear Martha brawl coming up next.
Yep, that's going to be an exciting one.
Yeah.
You write a letter to home and you try not to die afterwards.
I love it. All right. I think that's it. Oh, no. That is it. Have you guys have played it, right? You played that brawl. I have not played
it.
Yeah,
I've got I have a 100% win rate on it, and I'm going to say it's because I have more practice than everybody else.
Nice. I think that's probably right. I have not played it yet and probably should.
I'm undefeated as well.
Oh, really? How many have you played?
Like 3. I think I got my loot box.
Damn it.
I think I'm at 4 or 5 now.
How do you guys feel about 3 more?
Well, I don't know. Now I'm risking my undefeated streak.
Oh, yeah. Good point. That may not work out. All right.
If I retire early, I can never lose.
That's right. Time for this. All right, don't forget, don't leave just yet, chat room. There is one more chance for you to win a prize package here at the end of the show. We'll get to that in a minute. But before that, let's do an email from a listener. Brenton J is his name, and he says, at its best, Heroes of the Storm is my favorite game right now. Games are played because they are fun. However, few other games over my 25-plus years of gaming sometimes leads me to feeling worse and angrier than before I sat down to play them. What makes this game so compelling, even addictive, to make me want to play it, despite the fact that I don't always walk away from it 100% of the time feeling like I enjoyed myself, is it the loot boxes or some other carrot at the end of the stick that keeps me pulling me back in for one more game? Is it the gameplay or the social mechanic, or is it good games just so good that they override the bad ones? Thanks, Brenton. Well, Brenton, I don't know what the reason is, except I'm really glad to hear all those things. You know, MOBAs, I think by their design, are going to always have a chance for rando toxic behavior and somebody being a wiener for no reason. I've played in games where, you know, like one or two of the best players I play with, like Kyle and Bo, will both get reamed by some idiot on the team who thinks they're the worst player they've ever played with. And it, you know, it doesn't make sense, does not compute. And so it really doesn't matter from noob to you know, diamond, platinum, blah, blah, blah. Everybody runs into buttholes. There's just kind of no way around it. And the fact that you're still finding this to be the most addicting fun game you have is really heartening despite all that. So congratulations.
I have a thought I want to share about this.
Yeah.
If you would permit me.
No, please.
I'm going to call it.
Hold on. I need to give Bo permission. Hold on. Everybody quiet. All right, Bo, you're permitted. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. It's like Ghost in the Shell. Time.
Yeah.
I am the major and I consent to my speaking. So I'm going to call this. This is my personal experience and you might find you relate to it. But I think it's worth sharing because your question inspired me.
All right.
Even though you bragged about 25 years of gaming. I call it the Genji principle. All right. So there's this amazing talent on Genji at levels 16 and 20, where you increase the reflect damage of your kunai by 33% of the damage you take. And at 20, reflect instead of to one target, you reflect the damage to all heroes. So what happens is there's this beautiful moment that you might be able to create by dashing into the team, having everyone try and blow you up, you pop in that deflect and just exploding the entire team. I've yet to have achieved full deflect climax, but I keep queuing up for that window between level 16 to the end of the game to try and live that moment. And what keeps driving me to play it is the practice. And we've heard from a lot of Blizzard developers that part of the reason we keep playing a lot of their games is you might achieve something fun and feel good about it, but you also feel like you have something to work towards that's your own goal. And I think all of the heroes have that to some degree, and it's different things for different people. For all those Nova players without a soul, they're trying to just murderize the entire team without them ever seeing them. And perfecting that is driving them to continue to play. A Li Ming mega kill on full resets, the perfect mosh pit when you get all five of the teammates in there and your team's there to follow. Like, these moments are really high highs that we get in the game. And I think that's what keeps you playing, even though some games are just a waste of 20 minutes because someone was bad or the experience was poor. I think there's a legitimizing factor that it's an esport and that it's a competitive game worth your time. So you like to invest in getting better at the heroes you enjoy playing. And I call it the Genji principle.
I like it. All right. That's a good one. Go. No, I that's a good one. I call it the, it's funny, it's another Heroes of the Storm, Overwatch character for me, but for me it's the Tracer principle, because I feel that way with her. Like, I'm having a blast even when I'm losing because I'm figuring out wacky ways to stick a bomb on somebody or to zoom in, kill them, and get out. Like, there's so much fun to be had under the hood if you just, especially if you're playing solo, you just get it out of your head that everybody else is maybe playing poorly or they are mad for no reason. Put those guys on mute and play your game. And you'll have fun. Pretend they're AI. Yeah. I like that too.
It's fun to get better at the game.
There you go.
And that's, yeah.
Well said. We've left them with a very positive message. All right. What else? Is that it? That's it. Email us, core@heroesforyou.com. That's core@heroesforyou.com. Now, before we go, John, we want to give away our... So we have two codes to give away. Or not two codes. We have two things to give away. One, some garage stuff for the podcast listeners. Because up till now, we've given a bunch to the chat room, which is great. We love doing that. But we need to give some love to those at home who can't be here live. So we're going to do that right now. After this, though, when I've finished the show, all of you in the chat room, hang around because I got one more for you to win. Okay, so stay there. John, how are we going to do this? What do you want to do? How do you want to do it? Emails, tweets, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, you're the one who has to read the emails. Do you want to read emails?
I could do emails. Here's what you'll do, folks. Oh, you know what? That'll be a pain. Let me think. Here's a better idea.
How about sending us your best Dear Martha, and the best one will be selected for John to read?
Oh, I like it. They don't have to perform it. They just write it. That's pretty good.
They can just write it, and we'll select the best.
Oh, Bo, that's brilliant.
Hold on. Do we want to do best or do we want to pick one at random? Because I feel like random's fair.
Oh, then there's no bias. I see what you mean.
Yeah.
How about we do a random one and then you can also, as just a bonus, we read our favorite too.
Okay. We'll read our favorite, but it'll be a disqualifier if you just copy and paste some text from a website and say, Dear Martha, time travel is defined
dictionary
by...
Exactly. Yeah. No, we'll be reading them.
You'll be disqualified if you cheat. It has to be legit, Dear Martha.
Here's a little inspiration, people at home. Okay, you hear that music? That's your music. Think of that in your head while you're writing it. Type it up. Send it in an email. Email's good. We can totally do email. Send it to core@heroesforyou.com. Core@heroesforyou.com.
Can we get meta and do a Dear Martha about writing a Dear Martha?
Hold on to your butts.
I mean, you got your way, so you can't Dear Martha.
What?
You just ruined your own Dear Martha. Because... I was about to propose it's the best Dear Martha, and then John had this moment in his mind where he said, yeah, but it's random. It can't be the best Dear Martha. And you were all set, John, to be like, there's a problem with this, except we said, okay, it can be at random. So you're okay. You don't need to write Martha. You can ignore your children and wife.
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about now, Bo. You completely lost me, so we're good.
So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to play this music, and then John's going to whip one out. All right, so here goes. Go.
My dearest Martha, today, to boost morale, they've encouraged us to write letters from home. This is not that letter, Martha. That letter was crafted in a room with other people, and it felt impersonal. It didn't feel right, Martha. So I'm writing you this electronic mail to core@heroesforyou.com with my own personal letter about the war. It's going to have all sorts of details, Martha. It's going to tell you about my day, what I saw, what I hope for, how often I think of our children back home. Martha, it'll probably end with my death. Like saying, Thrall is electrocuting me right now. Which, funny coincidence, is exactly what's happening. So, Martha, in closing, this is the contest we came up with. And this letter has gotten so meta, I can no longer follow it. This is why I will never see you again. Yours truly, the people at Core, 32.
32. I don't know why that number's funny to me, but it is.
It just needed a number at the end, probably.
32
anyway,
funny
that's
number.
That's how we did the content.
There you go. That's the rules. You just heard them again, everybody. CoreHeroesForYou.com, the best one. Or not the best one. The random one gets picked, and then we may pick a best one and read it too. We'll see. We'll see what the quality of the content is when we get
it. I have some stuff I can give away, so maybe we will give something to the best one.
Yeah, and that, by the way, is the Garrosh Hellscream bundle. Tell people again, because the people at home haven't heard this yet. What will these people win?
You will win a new hero, Garrosh Hellscream.
Wow, that's hold on. Oh, that's fantastic. Tell them what else they might win, because isn't all part of that some skins or something, or is it just the character?
Lucky Core listeners will be able to get their hands on their very own deposed war chief. You may remember him from taking over the Horde briefly before people got really angry. In addition, you'll be able to get his Mad Axe skin, which is just going to be a great time should you find yourself in the wilderness and a deserted wasteland. It's a motorcycle, it's got spikes, it's very horny. In addition to that, you're going to be able to get that motorcycle that I just talked about. Basically, what I'm saying is it's a character, a skin, and a mount.
That's pretty good. Have fun. Yeah, have fun, everybody. There you go. Well done. Yeah, so that's what you'll win, but you got to get these into us, and we're going to award it next Tuesday. So if you want it, now's the time to do it. All right? Chat room again. Hang around. We got some stuff for you coming up here in a second. It's going to do it for us, though. We're going to play some games, though, so hang around if you want to watch us do that. That'll be a thing. So that's coming up here next. But for now, heroesforyou.com is our website. If you'd like to join us in game, it's super simple. /join Frog Pants. Play with us and other fans. And core@heroesforyou.com, once again, is our email address. Follow us all on Twitter. You can find Bo at Bo Schwartz, John at John_Jagger. You can find me at Scott Johnson and the show at Core Heroes. That's going to do it for us. For me, for John, for Bo. We'll see you next time. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
That's a good question.